Guys, this week I'm going real simple. I'm going real direct. I think that somewhere along the lines of my ridiculous, emphatic entertainment, I may have lost a message, and I don't want it to be lost along any of you. When I tell you that ElmontYouthSoccer.com is the greatest website on the internet today, I mean it. Go to ElmontYouthSoccer.com, proud sponsors of the show, and find yourself any jersey that you can think of, any sport, any year, any make, any team, any model, ElmontYouthSoccer.com. Go to them. The link is in our description, and enter the promo code TJW10 at checkout. When you enter TJW10 at checkout, you're going to save 10% on your order and help support the show. Going simple, going direct, go for broke. Guys, go to ElmontYouthSoccer.com and enter the promo code TJW10 at checkout. This week, Joe and I are going to update some modern rivalries in world football. We hope you enjoy.
Dang, bro. You got your radio voice going in. What the heck?
You like it?
I love it. Actually. It's actually good.
It's the phlegm. I have residual phlegm. Oh, yeah, bro. I have residual phlegm. It's all in my sinuses. Yeah. It's getting, plus it's raining. Like, it's getting humid now. So now the seasons are changing, bro. Oh, God. But I feel 100%. It. I do feel it in my chest. I feel very radio voicey right now.
Well, why don't you should apply for radio jobs, bro.
Joe, don't tell me about applying to jobs right now, but I can't handle anybody else telling me to apply. Let me tell you how much I apply to jobs. But you know what? Before I even get into other jobs that I apply to, and I apply to a bunch of them, I don't even want to get into that in the show. It's going to break my heart.
No,
somebody, please. I'm so good at ad reads. Let me tell you, bro. I want to tell you, you know what I do to make my job fun at times?
Tell me.
When I'm working at the school. So what I've elected to do to try to make things more fun is that whenever I have an outdoor duty at recess, right? Nothing real fun about that, right? You're not going to play. You're not going to do anything. All you're really doing is standing around on the pavement, walking around.
Of course.
The school that I'm at has implemented a system for people who need to go inside during the resources, right? Maybe it's to use the bathroom, whatever it is. What I say is very, very clear. Not every teacher has a key to get inside. So there are door administrators, like the students who stay on the other side of the door on the inside, and they have a password. And they give it to the teachers and they say, okay, here's the password. If somebody has to go to the washroom or something, if they need to get inside, they need to clear it by a teacher first. So therefore they need the password. They'll come up to a teacher, they'll ask for the password, they'll be able to go inside. What I do, Joe, because I'm a man of the people.
Man of the people.
I tell the kids, do you know rock, paper, scissors? And they go, yeah. And I go, all right, let's play. And then we play, and the rules are very simple. If I beat you at rock, paper, scissors, you do not get the password. You got to go ask somebody else. If you beat me, congratulations. You got yourself a password. Now, if I beat you and then you want a rematch, no problem. If you go 0-2 against me, buddy, it's over, right? And so these kids often do that. They'll go for, and they'll be like, oh, man. And so in the last week and a half, Joe, I've probably played, I'm not kidding, 1,000 games of rock, paper, scissors. Do you want to play against me right now?
Buddy, I'll beat your ass.
Want to? Okay, Joe. That's so here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand the rules of rock, paper, scissors. So a lot of people, I don't know where this came from. People think you shoot on scissors. These people are wrong. It's rock, paper, scissors, shoot, right? You shoot on shoot.
All right.
So I've seen a lot of strategies. Some kids, what they do is they watch your hand. They try to go like throw marginally after you. Bro, I'm telling you, Joe, you and I are about to do one for the ages. Rock, paper, scissors live virtually on the show. And I'm just telling you, I've had a lot of practice. So if you beat me, I'm going to be, I'll tell you what, bro. You could beat anybody at the school that I work at because I've beaten all
of them. Okay. Yeah,
right. Now you're way older than anybody else who I've played. I want to see your hand is nice and in frame. All right, bro, let's throw. Rock, paper. No, you're going way too slow, bro. You got to go with me. Rock.
Okay,
ready? Here we go. Go. All the marbles.
Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh! All right,
we've tied. Joe and I have each gone for paper. We're going to go again. This time faster, Joe. Ready?
Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh, we went for scissors again, bro.
Joe, see? So you're an absolute mastermind of rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, I know.
Because there are ways to win at this, bro.
I know.
The thing, what you would normally do, and should we go one more time just to see if we can settle it?
Let's go.
Ready?
Third time's the charm.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh, yeah.
Joe's beating me. Thank you. Great game, Joe.
Thank you, bro.
Here's the thing with rock, paper, scissors, right? A lot of people throw rock first. So what you do, you throw paper first.
100%.
9 times out of 10, that gets you, that you're automatically going to win. I don't think anyone in history, Joe, and I'm making a pretty bold statement here. You can let me know if I'm wrong.
Okay.
I don't think anyone in history has ever won a game of rock, paper, scissors playing scissors. Right? Like, there's just no way. No one has ever won rock, paper, scissors. We all know scissors is absolutely useless. It doesn't beat anything. Rock 100% is going to win because it beats the hell out of it. It just seems to beat everything except for paper. I understand the premise of this game. I'm just telling everybody. Mm-hmm. Rock is absolutely the best. And people think that. So you play paper. Paper gets the job done. No one's ever going to win with scissors. Everybody knows this.
Especially when your opponent's like 3 years old, right? So they're going to get...
Bro, they're like...
They're going to go with rock first thing. That's for sure.
This is what started happening, right? It didn't take long for this to become like a phenomenon. And then people just wanted to play me. People didn't need the password. Everybody knew the password, right? Because a kid would win and then he would go scream into the heavens. Yeah. I had a lineup of like 60 kids all wanting to play me in rock, paper, scissors. And the best streak I ever went on was probably like 15 in a row. Now, if you win 15 games of rock, paper, scissors in a row, you start to feel invincible, bro. There's just something about that feeling. You're like, dude, I am absolutely untouchable.
I'm going to crush these kids.
I was on form like you wouldn't believe. I had just hat trick after hat trick. I was beating kids. I'd give them instant rematches, beat them again. I'm like, bro, is this what being a world champion feels like? Like, is this what winning the Champions League feels like? Is this what winning a UFC title feels like? Because I have to imagine it's something similar. It's the closest I'll ever get to it.
15 wins in a row, bro. What are you trying to break hearts here?
Bro. I destroyed them. And then for some of the kids, here's the thing though. You got to know your audience. So some of the kids, I beat them and then they looked at me like confused. Like, so are you really not going to give me the password? And then the ones who looked like they might get emotional, I sympathy gave it to them. I told them, all right, listen, I'll give it to you because I feel bad for you. But you need some serious practice because I'm just straight up beating everybody in this and I'm embarrassed for your whole grade right now.
Why are they crying? They just want to go in to take a piss?
Yeah, bro. Imagine you got to pee and some bald guy who's a teacher there is whipping your ass in rock, paper, scissors. You're going to be pretty upset, right? You're going to be like, for God's sakes, bro. Come on.
Like, he's going to pee his pants, bro. Yeah, for sure.
And so, like I said, you got to know your audience. Then one kid was like injured and then I was like, all right, fine. No rock, paper, scissors for you. Then here's the password.
Oh, wow,
and the password is always just something silly. Just one word. It's a very bougie system. I don't fully understand it. But like I said, I turned something random into something fun, as I hope I did with this story. Now, speaking of turning something random into something fun, Joe, before we get into what we're going to talk about today, can you just refresh my memory of what we were talking about on the weekend about the TJW coaches? Can we just pitch this idea? I want to see how it's received by the people. Tell me, Joe.
So I was thinking, I don't want to give too much away because this could happen, but I was thinking maybe Nathan, Mina, we can go coach some little kids and have our own TJW league going on, And at first I'm pitching, we joined the same team, coach, assistant coach, each one coaches in a week, different games and stuff, different strats. I'm going to be Sean Dyche. I'm just going to let you know. For
Playing Brexit ball in house league.
Brexit ball in house league. So I need like 2 foot of tackles and all that. I love that. Amazing. You can be Pep,
Oh, bro, I will be. I'm going to be so Pep, bro. I'm going to overthink everything. I'm going to be playing formations these kids have never heard of before.
Yeah. You're going to reach the final and you're going to be like, all right, so we're going to play with no center backs.
Yeah, bro, we're going to be playing like 3-3-3-1. Everyone's like, what are we doing here? I have no idea how this works. Oh, bro.
Lateral passes, bro. I think this would be like The Office, bro. Blockbuster.
It would be. It'd be absolutely hilarious. I do actually want to do this. We want to like make a very scripted spoofed, mockumentary where we're like, but the thing is that the results would be real. So it would authentically be our reactions to stuff. It would just be that we're playing up these characters. I have to look into the logistics of it because I think it'd be absolutely hilarious if we had a TJW games like that.
So funny, man.
There's so much potential because we're just so great that we could do pretty much anything, right? Like we have as long as we have the means, we already have the knowledge, right? So we're there, bro. We can put all this together.
I'm all for it, bro. I'm all for it. I'm excited. If it happens, just expect 2 foot of tackles from my team. That's all I got to say.
And post-match, ignoring post-match handshakes, walking right down the tunnel, absolutely going to pack up the car, get this guy away from me, bro.
Go hug my girlfriend after a big loss, that's it. Oh, the bro, camera won't funny. See it.
I'm imagining you running like Mourinho off the bench to the corner flag and your team scores a late winner. Knee slides on the dry grass of outdoor Mississauga fields.
I'm going to love it, bro.
The absolute scenes.
Scenes, exactly. That's the right word. Speaking on scenes, you know, we got a bunch of scene games and shit like that.
We do, bro. You know what? Speaking of scenes, I'm going to translate scenes to scenes and spelling it differently, staying on the note of hominins. Here's my segue. TJW bites have been seen 106,000 times.
Bro, that's crazy, huh, Nathan?
Bro, and you know what surprised me? This one surprised me. So yesterday alone, I got like 5,000, right? So thank you, TikTok audience. One of them was one that I made about the Canadian Premier League, which did very, very decent numbers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what, man? I'm very proud of this because the Canadian Premier League is something that I want to start incorporating more to the show. I still have a lot of content ideas that we're going to get to over the coming weeks and months. But I thought, you know, if I'm making Canadian Premier League content, like if Barcelona content, for example, right, one of the biggest teams in the world is getting a certain amount of views, is the CPL going to get somewhere similar? And you know what? It did. Because soccer in Canada, the audience is here. And the thing is with soccer in Canada, this is the thing. This is going to get me in some serious trouble, bro, but I'm going to say this. Speaking like how I do, this is how I speak regularly.
Yeah.
This is credible enough for a Canadian audience. For an international audience, the amount of comments that I see saying, bro, nobody, you know, wants to listen to American football analysis. And I'm like, oh, bro, don't worry. I'm Canadian.
I'm Canadian.
Like, so if I had a marginally different accent, if my accent sounded slightly different, I'd have the credibility to say the exact same words. This I'll never understand, bro. But anyway, it doesn't matter, Joe, because you and I, you know what we do?
Tell me. We analyze.
We show up. We deliver.
We do.
It doesn't matter what we sound like. Sometimes we sound good. Sometimes we sound bad. We record with COVID. We record with phlegm. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are.
Radio voice phlegm, you know?
That's what I'm talking about, bro. Anyway, welcome everybody to episode number 140 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mr. Nathan Santos, a.k.a. Master Chef Nay. And with me in the co-hosting chair today, we're going to have a rotating cast over the next couple of weeks due to co-hosting availability. Mm-hmm. Joey is with us this week, and we're going to be hearing a lot more from him in the coming weeks. So, Joe, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. My pleasure. I love being here. So.
Our resident business insider, Joe, is actually on the 30 for 30 young people to watch list based on his work in financial advisement in Canada. This is one to watch out for, and he has immense amount of credibility. So when he, and this translates directly. So when he's telling us about AlmontYouthSoccer.com, you know you can believe him. When he's telling 100%. Us about footy, you know you can believe him. Unless he's saying something kind of outrageous, and then, you know, maybe we'll give him the benefit.
Yeah. Give me the benefit of the doubt. I'm better than my brother, so don't worry.
That is for damn sure. Mark is going to get his own segment on the show in the coming weeks/months, but only if my Jerswell fans are ready for it, because
these KW
family, listen, like, I know we got some strong stomachs and some strong ears, but at the same time, we like quality content, and Mark offers outrageous, it makes Stephen A. Smith look like Sean Dyche, right? Like, just it makes the most outrageous of men look like the most boring of men. And so anyway, that's something for another day. Joe, today we're going to update some of the great rivalries in football. And it's kind of an open-ended topic, right? When I planned this, I literally just wrote down a bunch of derbies that I could think of. And I went, how is this derby actually holding up, right? So there are questions to ask, and we're going to go through a bunch of them. I have a bunch of them written down. No particular order, no particular list. Basically, it's just, what does this rivalry look like today? What did it used to look like, and what did it used to mean? And what could it look like going forward?
Okay.
I wanted to start with one, but I think I'm going to call an audible here, change it last second. I want to start with the Merseyside Derby.
Okay.
All right? And the reason why is we're looking at two very, very opposite ends of the spectrum here. And not just because of the colors that they wear, but because of where they are in the table, where they are in terms of style of football and play.
Yeah.
Everton versus Liverpool used to be a fiercely competitive, you know, battle, stir crazy, insane rivalry where there was hatred amongst the players. Now you have, with the exception of maybe one, I would say that every single Everton player would gladly sign a contract with Liverpool tomorrow if the opportunity presented themselves, right? Correct. Liverpool are probably, definitely top two best teams in England, if not in the world. and Everton are in the relegation zone, which is preposterous. So there's a lot to kind of unpack here. Before we get to the rivalry, you and I spoke about on this very show what we thought Frank Lampard would be able to do at Everton. It hasn't necessarily translated so far. Can you kind of walk me through what you think the problem is at Everton and then, you know, what you think of this rivalry historically versus now?
Well, we'll address the problems with Everton. I think mismanagement of funds is one of them. But before we get into the manager, I think purchasing players, like they bought like three central attacking mids, you know, Klaassen at one point, Dele Alli now. They got Dele Alli and Van de Beek all in the same transfer window. Dele Alli never plays.
No, neither of them do.
Neither of them do. So, you know, there's another thing, like there's no point for that. They buy like, they buy players and there's like no, I guess there's no strategy with them.
Right.
You know?
There's no avenue for them to succeed. It's just nothing, like purchasing for the sake of purchasing.
Exactly. And they have money, you know, they have a decent amount of money for how much they've spent because they have some good players. I think Alan is good and Hamas
For the quality in the squad, they shouldn't be anywhere near where they are in the table. Right, no, which means definitely. That it's misperformances on the pitch from, I don't know if you want to call it individual mistakes, if it's from the management, if it's from the secret spy, Rafa, trying to absolutely screw them over from day one.
I know.
There's a lot of things that went into this. But like, you know, we talk about some teams overperforming and punching above their weight. This is the antithesis of that. They are massively, massively, massively underperforming where they're at risk of getting relegated. If you told me at the beginning of the season Everton were at risk of getting relegated, I would have been like, are you stupid, bro? Get the hell out of here.
I know. And it's one of those things. And the appointment of Lampard, especially in the position you're in, you know, good luck to Lampard and all, but I think you might need like Sam Allardyce. I hate the fact that they get jobs, but you need someone to get you out of relegation.
You need
and
Brexit
now they're
ball.
In. Yeah, you need Brexit ball. And they're in relegation now. So congrats to you guys. But it's not one thing. It's been years of mismanaging funds. It's been years of that. A change of managers like three times, like it's too much. And you can just see Everton like crumble. Like we're watching it fall apart, to be honest. I think Everton, if they were to get relegated, it would be better for the club in the near future because they need a restart, bro. You know how we say in the NBA, you know, just blow it up and start fresh? That's exactly what they need because half that team, if not all the team, most of the team, are not going to be there next season because they have like something in their contract stating that they leave if they get relegated.
They're not going to.
And it's one of those times like, but it's one of those times where we see like a mid-table like, can compete to European team, like actually get relegated after being in the Prem for so long. So you can see potentially stuff like that happening next year. We'll see how it goes. But to get to your answer overall, I think it's just mismanagement and mismanagement of funds. This is from the board, definitely from the board. It's on them. The other thing is the Merseyside Derby is like, I'm going to give it like out of 5 stars, it's like a 2-star Derby in my opinion. Mm. And the reason is
modern-wise or historically?
Modern-wise. Reason being, we already know, you already highlighted in the beginning, is that Liverpool is like so far ahead.
It's not even close.
It's like two different worlds, and their stadiums are really close to each other. You know, obviously they're in the same city.
Yeah.
But it's a joke right now, especially this season. After watching it twice, you're like, you know, maybe the fans are so competitive about it, but Everton is just they're down bad basically, and it's one of those things. Like it makes you think, but overall, if you want, it's like definitely like a 3.5. There's been classics.
Right.
Definitely there's been classics, but currently it's not a thing. And then, you know, if Everton got relegated, this thing doesn't even exist anymore. And that would be crazy. So
that would be absolutely crazy. But I mean, talk about blowing it up. Like that would be, I don't even know where that would rank amongst like the biggest upsets in the history of the Premier League to see a comfortable billionaire owned mid-table side.
Yeah.
Who was on the verge of like maybe a few pieces away from being what West Ham are to then being like in the relegation zone. And the thing is, this is a problem. Like, I don't know how close they actually will. I still don't think that Everton will go down. I think it'll be Norwich, Watford, and Burnley.
Okay.
The thing is, you know, we're cutting it very, very close here.
Dude, it's close. It's close.
Now, the positives to look at here is that if we look at Newcastle, who did some brilliant business in January to keep themselves up, it doesn't take much when you're in that scenario floating around the bottom to escape it, right? If Everton could get 6 points in the next few games, they'd probably get more than any of the other teams that they're competing with, and therefore they'd be safe. And I would trust Everton in terms of quality of the squad to figure it out. Mm-hmm. However, the other end of that coin is that Everton have not given anybody a reason to think that they would be able to figure things out, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
They've like done poorly.
So poor.
Now, I like what you said about the mismanagement of the club. And I, you know, I'm not the person to be complimenting Liverpool. However, Liverpool are punching above their weight, which is kind of what makes this why I wanted to kick it off with this one. If you look at the net spend of Liverpool versus the quality of the players that they have versus who they're competing with and outperforming, it's outrageous, right? Yeah. Like, they're not spending at the same rate to equate to the success that they're having, which means they're massively punching above their weight. Everton have probably spent more than anybody in the bottom half of the table, I would say, over the last 5-10 years. In
without
the
a doubt. Without a doubt.
Right? Because they seem to have every few summers, they just get, cool, let's get like 4 or 5 new players in. And then because of the constant manager rotation, they're like, is this the new school? Maybe. Okay, we'll buy him. We'll get this guy. Like, without any actual plan to succeed, right? It's not one guy with one plan. And to be honest, this seems to be a reoccurring theme in the Premier League. There's a lot of cases of this. Next week, Mina and I are going to do the Manchester United full Ten Hag rebuild. That one's going to be exciting. Stay tuned for that. But moving on from Everton and just moving on to this derby as well, if you would give it a 2 out of 5 stars for how it is modern-wise, I think that's fair because you still have to factor in historically what this has meant, because it really wasn't that long ago. Like, 5 years ago, these were both mid-table sides.
Yeah.
And just gradually, it's been
5 years ago,
completely, right? Like, when Brendan Rodgers was in charge of Liverpool, he got sacked after not beating Everton, who were in and around the same position in the table.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, Everton are at serious jeopardy of getting relegated, and Liverpool are in serious contention for winning a treble, if not a quadruple, right? That's preposterous to see how far these two sides can go. And so where does this rank amongst modern rivalries? I would say it's fallen off massively. The final note on it would be, what does this have to do then, seeing how much it has fallen off, to bridge the gap and come back up? Right? Like, what has to happen here? Is it just going to be that over time, naturally, Liverpool are going to come down and Everton have nowhere to go but up? And so therefore, it can still get back to that? Or do you think it's that the fact that modern football is so distant from rivalries because everybody just seems to be friends and, you know, they represent their team, but they're all just buddies anyway, that it can never get back quite to the, you know, like, vicious animosity of what it means to be on opposite ends of Liverpool?
Yes. Yes. I mean, personally, like, I think like it can't, especially with Everton, and this goes to all the modern rivalries. I think it's gotten a little bit more soft compared to before, you know.
Yeah,
all the footballers are friends, right? It's not quite as bad as the NBA, because NBA, I feel like that stuff's non-existent, to be honest. Everyone fights with everyone, but like, behind the scenes, they're all buddies, right?
Right.
But it's definitely like, you know, they're friends and all that. But specifically though, with the Everton Liverpool one, no, I think these guys actually genuinely hate each other. Like, they hate Pickford because he injured Van Dijk, right?
That's
so
fair.
I think these guys genuine, like, Allison was taking the piss at Pickford, the way he held the ball and like,
yeah, I saw that. That was hilarious.
so like, these guys actually, like, they're like, screw you. And like, if you get relegated, we won't even like care. It's
right.
Be funny. Right. So yeah, I think the Merseyside derby is usually like a very like aggressive kind of derby, so it's usually like that. And I mean, it, for where it is right now, it's kept some of its momentum in that department, I guess you could say. But
right.
But the quality is just so outlandish, man. It's just crazy. So yeah, that's my take on it.
All right, we're going to come back to the Premier League. Normally I would segue within the league, but I actually want to move out of the Premier League here for a moment and talk about their Clásico, which is the derby, and we call it this, right? But it's really, it's not like a city rivalry. It's more just a Clásico style rivalry where you have two elites of one division who constantly go into battle together, who are revered as just like, it, bro, it's a classic when they play each other because the games are always banging, right? And we're so used to seeing each other, to see them play each other in massive, massive competitions that it becomes a classic. Bayern Munich versus Borussia Dortmund. I think there was a time, I mean, what, almost 10 years ago now, damn. This was a Champions League final, right? They were playing each other. They were playing each other domestically in the league. And if you look at what, and I know you're not the biggest Bundesliga fan, which is why I will happily defend this one, but I want to give you the opportunity to talk about this one. It's not competitive anymore, man. Like, there used to be a time when these were really competitive and Dortmund had it. And what Dortmund would do is they had these exciting players who had nothing to lose and they fought together and they still very much embody that spirit. They really do. But Bayern have distanced themselves from the pack, right? Bayern have gone on to win, and they did. Having beaten Dortmund on what, Saturday? Saturday, they won their 10th league title in a row, which means for everything that I love about the Bundesliga, something has to change here. Does it start with this rivalry, right? Like, this is like a Bundesliga question as a whole almost. Does this rivalry define the Bundesliga in your opinion, and how teams can start to close the gap on Bayern? Or is this just destined to only get further away because Bayern are just going to make it 20 and 30 league titles in a row and no one's ever going to come near them?
Yeah, you know, the Farmers League rivalry, it's a crazy
Stop
one.
This.
But honestly, like...
oh, no.
you just hit it on the nail, right? 10 years ago, this was a Champions League final. Because mm-hmm. that 10 years ago was the last time the stupid freaking league was competitive.
Wow.
So you just said it. I didn't say it, bro. You said 10 Bundesliga titles? And you're telling me this ain't a fucking Farmers League? You're going to say that with chest?
We're going to get to lots of examples, Joe. We're going to get to lots of examples of dominance in the league versus Farmers League stigma, right? And this is one that we can come back to. But no matter what we think of the league, right? Farmers League or respected competition, one thing is very clear, and it's that no one's competitive with Bayern. Bayern are so far ahead of the pack when it comes to being consistent across. For them, it's 34 weeks, right? Because they only have 18 teams in the league.
For sure. I mean, this is more of a German football issue because... Right. You know, their 50 plus one rule is also good and bad. Mm. And one of the bad things is that owner takeover, that stuff doesn't really happen as much in the Bundesliga. Mm. And nobody wants to buy Bundesliga teams because of that, because the fans have too much say. So with that being said, like, it becomes less competitive. You know, everyone wants to buy a Premier League team, of course.
Yep.
You know, but like with the Bundesliga, it's something they got to look at. And, you know, 10 Bundesligas in a row, that's actually like, you know, if I were the German FA or whatever, I'd have like warning signs, because this just means like, what a boring ass league that we're watching, you know, every week in, week out. And I'm sure what you said previously before, where you said, hey, like when the other teams other than Bayern are playing each other, it's really fun. It's super competitive.
Even against Bayern, the games are still really fun to watch. It's
but
just
Bayern's
that
win.
Inevitably, it's like watching a movie you've seen before, right? It doesn't matter how awesome it is. You know what the ending is going to be because Bayern just seem to always win, which segues me to my next point here, which is the pressure on the other teams in Germany. Now, you're right to say, you know, the 50 plus one rule and acknowledge that. I think you're right. I think that does play a massive part in it. However, the other side of that coin is understanding how much the Bundesliga has grown over the last 10 years as well, right? Just having one team lead the pack by so much, it's the classic trickle-down versus grassroots approach to analyzing things, right? And if the top-down approach, which it seems to be right now, right? Because Bayern are going out, they are representing the Bundesliga, and they're winning Champions Leagues too, right? They're being competitive in Europe. So it's not like the league is a wash. The league would be a wash if Bayern never did anything either, right? Then I would concede the argument to you, Joe. That's really what the factor is to me. But really what this is saying is that the league is competitive and fun to watch. And the best of the best can hang with the best of the best in Europe. So there's so much that is offered here, right? Mm-hmm. However, when we look at a classical, right, at a game like this, that's supposed to be a rivalry. what has to happen here? Is it that like the league has to implement a thing that to take Bayern out of this race where they just say like German clubs are no longer permitted to sell to Bayern because that'll wreck everything? Or is it that there needs to be a new best rivalry in Europe, right? Like I don't know if it's going to be somebody else with Bayern because Leipzig are climbing that list very, very quickly, right? I understand nobody in Germany likes Leipzig because of the, you know, the loud, noisy neighbors who are coming up with the huge backing. However, if Leipzig decide we are no longer going to be a selling club, we are going to be Bayern and we are going to rival Bayern and we are going to acquire elite young talent and keep them and destroy other teams, what happens then? And now the rivalry says, okay, well, Dortmund have fallen off, but another team will naturally take its place. And this is the next great rivalry for the next 10 years of the Bundesliga.
Yeah. You know what? You just said it. Leipzig, who is a big team, have to decide, hey, I don't want to be a selling club. Mm. Why are you second or third in the Bundesliga and you're a selling club? This is my problem with Bundesliga. Right.
Yeah.
All the top four should always say, hey, we should add on, not, hey, we should give it to first place. That's a joke. And that's you know what? It kind of boils my blood because it's borderline embarrassing because before Leverkusen, Wolfsburg, all these teams, they used to compete in Europe. When you think of Europe now on Germany, you only think of Bayern Munich, which shouldn't be the thing because there's like two or three other teams that are in that everyone will say, nah, they aren't making it out. And guess what? They don't, because why? They sell it. They sell, they're selling teams. You know, I don't know if there's no funds in the Bundesliga or whatever, but it's just, you asked me the question of what needs to change. It's just don't be a selling club. End of, like, that's it. You offer Champions League football, guys.
Yeah. Well,
three of them.
Like, and in fairness, Leipzig are, I mean, I knock on wood here, I don't want to jinx anybody, but are likely going to go on to win the Europa League, which means it's not a club that is impossible to achieve anything. Like, you must go to Bayern to achieve anything in Europe.
Exactly.
The steps are in place there. So as we round back to the question here, the question becomes, and I've analyzed Der Klassiker because that's what it's come to be known as.
Yeah.
But the question remains here. Does Bayern Munich have a new rival incoming for the next great rivalry, or can Dortmund do anything to close the gap? Or is the answer quite simply like, as long as nobody sells, because that's also a big if, right? Because it's just not historically what happens here. They all do. They just elect to, right? Like, what needs to change here? Because Bayern don't have to do anything different, but you know, like, Bayern are only going to have to do anything different if these clubs decide not to, right? When we look at how not competitive it is, if, you know, what if Bayern, and I'm not, is again, another what if Bayern went out and got freaking Nkunku and Bellingham in the offseason? Like, could you imagine, bro? Hey, that would just be the biggest slap in the face in the entire world.
Yeah. It's like the Bundesliga basically are like the energy. They're like batteries for
Bayern
success. Bayern Munich. Yeah, exactly. That's it. They're like, okay, funnel everything and feed King Bayern so he can go compete in Europe. It's a joke because...
Are Bayern ever going to have a competitive rivalry again then? At this rate?
At this rate, no. No, bro. No. Of course not. Come on. And Nathan Haaland's leaving next year, you know. And Jude Bellingham, one more year and he's gone too. Like, these are your two best players and they've only lasted there for like 2 minutes.
But that's literally a lot of what Dortmund do, right? Like, a lot of what they have is just guys who are in there for... You know, two, three
selling
seasons.
Selling club, all that. Yeah, no, you got to change the philosophy completely. Either they want to compete and maybe the Germans enjoy it like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you're not competing for trophies, I don't know what the hell there is to enjoy. You just watch your club play?
Yeah.
No, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like Bayern Munich, like if you're a Bayern fan, you're laughing. 10 fair Bundesligas? Enough. What kind of farmer shit is that? Sorry.
No, it's fair enough. Hey, listen, like, and this is why I want to talk about this, right? Because we're updating these. We're looking at the ones that are supposed to be classics and saying, where are they now? And so I want to go now to, I think, the most classic rivalry that there has ever been and likely ever will be. And that's El Clasico.
Definitely.
I don't want this to end the show. Normally, I save the big one for the end of the show. I actually don't want it to be because I don't want to push this off any longer. We've spoken about, you know, what it means to have rivalries domestically. Right? Like where you have a city rivalry versus where you have a rivalry that's formed through competition because they happen to be the best of the best. This is literally the epitome of that. El Clasico is generations upon generations of the two best clubs in Spain going head to head.
Yeah.
Right. And then that was catapulted exponentially by having the two greatest players to ever exist play on opposite ends.
Prime El Clasico right there.
Yeah. Right. As we look now into what El Clasico is, there's, you can't really say that it's not competitive anymore because it has been very competitive for very long. I know the most recent example we saw was the new look Barca absolutely thrashing Real, but Real had a lot of problems too. In the next stage of this rivalry, where does it rank amongst Europe's elite rivalries? And what has to change for Real Madrid to reestablish themselves in this? Because Barca, we see the steps that they're taking.
Yeah.
But Barca are getting a lot younger and they're ascending. And that comes with problems, don't get me wrong. But Madrid, who are ageless right now, will eventually lose to Father Time.
Yeah.
They have to, and they look like they're setting themselves up to be the best team to ever, right? It looks like they're setting themselves up by getting all the best players and all the best free agents this summer to just say, yeah, we are never going to lose a game again.
Yeah.
I'm going to, thinking about all that, where does this rivalry rank amongst Europe's elite today? And today, what might it look like going forward?
Today, it's definitely number two.
Interesting.
It's not number one, but, you know, because El Clasico is always a big game and there's always big players, but in the future, it'll take back number one. The thing is that both teams, this is notorious with El Clasico. Every time they lose a star player, it takes like a hiatus for one or two seasons and it comes back bigger than ever, bro. Blockbuster games, Antonio Rudiger, center back, Mbappe striker, Real Madrid ready to take on the world and freaking, and Barca got like Pedri at the helm or they signed someone big up front and whatever. And then it becomes more competitive, right? It's competitive because it's aggressive. Right. It's a fun time. It's a good time to watch. And, you know, as long as both teams keep buying the best of the best, mostly Madrid, who like buy everyone who breathes. Yeah.
Well, Barca would too if they didn't. Well, I mean, they did, to be fair, a few years ago. They bankrupted themselves doing it.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it well.
Exactly. They bankrupt and they're in further debt purchasing these players, but the strategy is different. Here, we actually see a vision.
Right.
Previously, 132 million for Coutinho. Okay, what are you going to do with Coutinho for 132 million?
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything, right?
No, they didn't have a plan for him. They were just you're going to play in midfield / left wing. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I know. Like, and Dembele's back. Dembele is back and he's living up to the hype that we all knew he was going to do because he's been playing really, really well.
As we knew, bro. If he can string together the run of form through fitness, he's a hell of a player.
I'm not surprised because we all knew this guy's a certified baller. So now with him, you know, he could leave in the summer too. And he's been talking about it, but he could also stay.
Yep.
This is what I mean. So Clasico is going to be a fun watch next year, I feel.
Yeah.
It's not going to be 5-1 anymore, but there's going to be lots of goals and it's going to be lots of clashes. So, yeah, I mean, for the future of El Clasico, I think both teams are upgrading again. It doesn't take too long for teams like that, but especially when you're Barcelona and Real Madrid, you always have to like compete in Europe. So they know what they're doing right now.
Who do you think is more likely to be the dominator of Europe between the two sides? Because you said it's the second best rivalry, but it will go back to first, which means, if I'm understanding that correctly, that these two teams will reign again amongst Europe's elite, right? These two teams will be revered as the best teams in the world once again someday. Who is better equipped to do that? I don't want to say as presently constructed, just as however you interpret the club, who is the more likely team to be the next dominator of Europe? Because, I mean, you could say Barca because they have the long-term project, but the long-term project doesn't always pay off. You could say Madrid because of all the signings, but, you know, just working on paper doesn't always mean you're going to work on the pitch, right? So there's a lot to factor in. Factoring in all that, where would you lean?
The second Barcelona gets random Brazilians from I don't know where, it's Barcelona, they're going to win. Because these guys scout the weirdest people and they become the best in the world, bro. The best in the world. So I'd lean towards Barca, but Madrid, bro. Like, if you're going next year and they're actually going to get Mbappe and they do get Rudiger, they're going to be the best. They're probably going to be the best. Like, that's it. You know, you can do as much as like developing a player and all that, but when you buy finish, when you buy the player, then what's the point? That means a 21-year-old Mbappe, bro, or however old he is, I think he's 22, and he, if he stays there till 27, that's a couple years of domination.
Right.
And I don't know if he hit his prime then either. So like,
honestly,
we'll see how it goes. I think it's more Madrid, to be honest with you. We'll see.
I think that's a fair shout. I won't play devil's advocate for that because I would probably agree. I mean, listen, like when a super team is calling, there's not a whole lot you can do to ignore it, right? And so if Real Madrid are supposed to get everybody that they're linked with and there's really nothing stopping them, right? Like when Don Fabrizio Romano's tweeting about how things are going to happen, they're going to happen, right? Exactly. And so when you start to think about Madrid acquiring Mbappe for free and Rudiger for free, and, you know, whoever the hell else they want. I've said this a million times in the show. I'm going to say it again in case anyone forgot. Camavinga is the reason that Madrid will not sign Pogba. I don't want people to say, oh, Pogba's going to go to Madrid on a free. No, they have Camavinga. You don't understand. Camavinga is better than Pogba now, and he will be better than Pogba was in the future. Camavinga is the guy, the present and the future.
I agree.
However, Joe, and this is the thing, I have to do this. Functionality is extremely important. Not everybody can just be dropped into a team and settle in immediately, right? Yeah. There are things to factor in with Real Madrid, right? Think of what Rudiger was before Tuchel.
Yeah.
Does he revert to that once he's playing in a more exposed system? Because he's not the greatest passer in the world. He's a hell of a defender.
He's not the greatest passer in the world,
right? So I'm thinking, but he's next to David Alaba. So does he need to be? Because if he's going to be like Eder Militao and he's going to take that spot from Militao, does he just have to be more stable and less reckless? If that's the case, bro, maybe he's going to do fine. Maybe he's going to be more exposed and his aggression is going to show and he's going to get himself sent off. Like, I don't know how he's going to react to the team. The other thing is, we think of Mbappe playing at Real Madrid. It seems like destiny. Yeah, but Benzema's better than ever, so he's not going to play at striker. And Vinicius is the most one-footed, right-footed player in the world, which is stupid because normally right-footed players have some weak foot. He has zero. So Mbappe's going to play on the right wing then? Well, Mbappe's the best player in the world. Why would you displace the best player in the world for position? So how are they going to figure out the functionality of the front three? There are things to consider when you think about Real Madrid. And all I'm saying here is, if I'm planting a seed of doubt, then fine. And plus, you know, Modric is getting older. Hey, better than ever right now. Don't get me wrong. As good as it's ever been. Fine. Toni Kroos, hey, man. Pace, you know, a tempo setter. Yeah, but they'll probably need somebody else, you know, pretty soon. You know what I mean? Like, there, you start to think, but the squad's kind of aging. Is the replacement going to work immediately? Whereas Barca, you look in and go, bro, they can endure the hellfire right now because they are building a stable base together through a young core. Maybe this is the side better equipped to take on the mantles of Europe, or maybe not, right? Like, there's so much to factor in. Ultimately, with this rivalry, I don't think this rivalry is ever going to change. I think this will have the most meaning out of any rivalry in world football.
Correct.
Because because they're so competitive with each other. And even when Barca are falling down the table or Madrid have to rebuild and whatever, you know, Barca are the winning 8 league titles out of 10, because I think they did that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But why weren't Madrid considered, like, you know, why wasn't it like, oh, Barca are making this a farmers league? Well, because Madrid were winning 4 out of 5 Champions Leagues. Right. Yeah. So it's like they were almost saying, yeah, you have the league, bro. No problem. We're going to go out and win the Champions League. There are so many different things to factor in here. I think that in this rivalry in particular, nobody really, I know there are a few examples, but nobody really crosses the divide between Barca and Madrid. If you are Barca, you are Barca. And if you are Madrid, you are Madrid. Whereas in the other rivalries, I think at least on one side, nobody has a problem crossing the line. Right. We know there are players who play for Dortmund and for Bayern. We know that almost every Everton player, if you went to Allen or Richarlison or freaking, what's his name there, the striker who hasn't played all season, but he's supposed to be really good.
Calvert-Lewin,
thank you. If you walked up to any of them and said, hey, you want to play at Liverpool? They'd be like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
If you went up to any Liverpool player right now and said, hey, you want to go to Everton? They'd be like, no, but it's because they're relegated. It's not, if they were in first, they would definitely go, right? They would definitely switch. So, this rivalry, however, I think if you told Gavi, hey, Madrid are going to win the Champions League next year, do you want to go there? He'd be like, no, I'm Barca through and through. And if you told, you know, Benzema, like, hey, you know, even if Madrid, who don't treat their legends well, hey, do you want to go end your career at Barca and, you know, they're the best team in the world right now? He'd be like, absolutely not. And he's not even Madrid born.
Yeah.
Just like been there since he's for the last.
We can definitely say that years. Though, but like there's been countless Barca switches.
There's
like
been a few. I know there's been a few.
Ronaldo, yeah.
I'm saying that that line is very rarely crossed. I think historically though, that statement holds true. There are few players willing to cross that divide because they understand how big that rivalry is.
100%. 100%.
Now I feel like I should have ended on that. But you know, I'm not going to. I think we still have some more. We still have tons of rivalries that we can get to. We can talk about the Milan derby, which I think is an interesting one because we could just give it a few minutes of attention. Then we're going to end back in the Premier League.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about Milan here. Like, because you have Inter, right? You have Milan. You have what the Serie A has been for the last 10 years, which was largely dominated by Juve, right? Juve. They won, what, like 9 of the last 10 years worth of titles?
Scudettos, yeah.
Plus reaching a few Champions League finals in that mix. Yeah. But this is while the Milan clubs had massively fallen off.
Oh, massive, right? Massive.
Like they it was terrible what was happening. It's like they bankrupted themselves. They couldn't rebuild. Even when they had new ownership, they were buying for the sake of buying. Nothing was working on the pitch. There were so many problems. Now, each side has steadily rebuilt the club to be competing with each other at the top of the table. And that's why I wanted to save this rivalry for now. Because this is one that has gone through a lot, right? Historically, this is a massive rivalry. They share a freaking stadium. Right? So we know how close this derby is to home. And now they are currently chasing each other in a city rivalry for the Serie A title. Yeah. You know, Milan trying to really take the step back. Inter trying to go two for the last 2 years. Inter were, you know, damn near unstoppable last year. They lost a few of their key players, but they've replaced them really
well
that they have. Talk to me a little bit just about the rivalry, either of these teams. Let's spend a few minutes talking about them.
No, it's exciting. I'm really excited. The Milan derby is back. Reason being, like you said, they're competing again. That's it. They're competing again. They found the right players to fit each system, play unique football. It's great. It's great. And it's good to see again because the past years have been the worst.
Yeah,
of both teams, like San Siro was dead. It was just like, and you can feel a little bit of magic happening now. And you know, this is great for the Serie A because once those two teams are competing, the rest are playing well too. You know, Roma's on the come up now. Yeah. Juventus are trying to find themselves again. You know, it's good. The Serie A is becoming way more competitive than it was, and it's good for viewership. It's good for football because we actually watch the games. I watched a couple of Serie A games this year.
Yeah.
I did. And I haven't watched a Serie A game in I don't know how long. Like, I couldn't tell you. So the Milan derby's back. You know, Inter Milan is good. AC Milan is good. Fighting for first. This is like the ideal situation. So a historic rivalry back at it. You know, that's what I want. I'm really excited.
Do you think at the current rate of ascension that either of these clubs can ever become the European superpowers that they once were?
Yeah.
Because right now you look at like the other teams who are on the come up and who are at the top. And for as good as Inter and Milan are and how fascinating they are to watch and how much I think of like everybody who's a neutral has no problem loving this rivalry and either side's fan base. It's like, okay, well, even if they're on the come up, like, bro, they're still nowhere near like City, Liverpool what Madrid are going to be, Barca, what they're going to be. Like, when you look at Bayern, like, there's still a huge gap in quality that they have to cross to get world-class players into it. But they're taking the steps, right? Like, they're building slowly and intelligently to bring themselves back up to that caliber, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you highlighted that. Like, I think their best strategy for both teams is to recruit young and develop. Because competing with City, Chelsea, Liverpool, Madrid, Barca, like all these guys, it's going to be hard. But once you develop players like Tomori, just building them up.
Canadian, by the way.
Canadian. 26, 27 years old or whatever, they'll be in their prime. It's going to be good. So I think their best bet is to develop. They have funds to compete in certain areas, but they don't have like – it's – a lot's changed since then, since when they were big. A lot's changed.
Well, because they're not the giants in Europe anymore.
No.
Right? But it's on them for letting themselves fall that far down the table. Yeah. Because to be honest, any big club that does this, like you only have yourself to blame, right? If you didn't take into account what the future could hold and you let yourself go from elite of the elite to
like, I don't want to say mid-table, but damn near in that range, where you're really not competing with the best of the best. It's on you to then say, okay, how do we bridge that gap and come back up? And there, it's a lot more work. It's almost like staying in shape versus getting in shape, right? Like, if you're consistently working out and you're in shape, it's not the hardest thing in the world. But if you like really let yourself go and you're like, oh my God, I'm so far from where I want to be. Like, how the hell am I going to get back there? It's a big gap. It's a big jump to get back to there.
100%. You hit it. Oh. You're at the right spot, bro. This is it. But it's exciting to see. I'm excited.
The last rivalry, there's a few more we could talk about, but I do want to talk about this one because I think it'll take us out to the end of the show, which I'm fine with. Mm-hmm. It's the Manchester Derby.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot I have to say here in terms of setting it up because you and I could talk about this even, you know, without having a United fan present.
Yeah.
You could still speak to the, you know, like what this rivalry has meant historically. There was a time, and I'm just going to present to you not as a City fan, just as a objective, like what is going on with this rivalry.
Yeah.
There was a time when the blue side seemed to be the noisy neighbors. Now it's like the red side is the pesky old man shouting about the olden days, right? Like, and this goes back to what I was just saying about the Milan clubs. Letting yourself fall so far down is your own fault. Yeah, and now you're so far from where you want to be. And we saw it. Even just look at when Liverpool played United or when City played United. Like the most recent examples that we can look at. There, it's not competitive. It's not even close. Like the gap in quality is several. It's not just like, oh, if they had one or two key pieces, it's like, no, so like throw out the whole damn playbook and start again.
Correct.
So that in 5 years, this can be a real rivalry again. Because right now, it's nowhere near the top level of the game.
No, 100%. You know what, though? I think the Manchester Derby is still in its baby stages, actually.
Wow. And
I'll tell you why. You know, I don't think the Manchester Derby was relevant until like 2009.
Okay.
The reason being is that because the way United are now were what City were before, where they weren't, you know, really competing that much. But that was going on for years, man. You know, maybe in the 50s or 60s, I know that the Derby was huge.
Yeah.
It was big because they were both in the league and they were actually competing a little bit here and there, right?
Right. And there was a lot of players from the city, right? So you were playing like really the sides of the city, representing your own blood. Yeah.
100%, right? So it was way different. And I know it was competitive at one point, but I still think it's in its baby stages and United are like shit right now. We get it. And they got to get better. But because previously, you know, United had to, you know, the Liverpool United Derby, the United Arsenal Derby, you know, that these are big games, you know, and historic games. And they're still historic games.
And they are so derbies. The big time. Like,
exactly.
100%.
And when I think about United, like the Manchester Derby, what I think of like the first thing is probably like Balotelli, Why Always Me, or like Rooney overhead kick. And that was like 2009. That's
11, 10, yeah. Like 11, literally in that range.
Like that. And you know, yes, it's a long time for like it was a couple, but in essence, like it's not really that long compared to other rivalries. But I think it's still in its baby stages and it's going to grow even bigger. If Ten Hag, if United in general make the right moves next season, then yes, you know, we're back at it. This derby is going to mean so much. It's going to be fun and it's going to last for years because, you know, City aren't slowing down and United are just coming back up. So this is one of the rivalries that I think just resurrected from the 50s or 60s, if anything.
Fair. I think that if anything, it may be even more a bit of a tribute to United because they have so many rivalries in the Premier League because they were the top dogs dominant, competing with every era of who the relevant top dogs were at the time, right?
Exactly. Like
under, you know, the invincible Arsenal competing with Mourinho's Chelsea, right? Like when you look at like historically, what are the historic massive clubs? The thing is, eventually, after the 20-year span, United just didn't, you know, the aftermath, it wasn't there.
Now.
Right? Yeah, after the, and I'm not saying anything that people don't already know. People know this, right? After the Sir Alex Ferguson era, United needed, but this is it. They needed to plan for that and they just couldn't handle not playing at that level. And so they shot right down and they haven't been the same since. I think I hear where you're coming from. I actually might agree with it. I hadn't considered that about this being in the baby stages because we've never really seen, we've seen glimpses, right? But we've seen it at a peak that really wasn't the peak of the larger part, right?
Exactly.
We saw a peak of where it has peaked previously, bless you, the, you know, 2008 to 2013, 14 kind of era.
Correct, yeah.
Where it was like, okay, like these are both teams. There has yet to be a time when these two clubs were the two best in Europe, where a lot of other rivalries have been that, right? Like even Der Klassiker, right? There's never been a Champions League final that was from Man City versus United. Like that's crazy, right? That's gigantic.
Yeah.
United are nowhere near that right now. But even next season, if let's say United start to play really exciting football and United beat City in a derby, it still doesn't make it close. It still doesn't make it competitive.
Yeah.
Right. It's still because what's going on in the league far surpasses one game. And I get one game is very important. Believe me, I hate losing the derby.
Yeah.
I love winning the derby. It's such an awesome feeling to win the derby.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, if United did the double over us and we won, you know, two trophies that season and they finished eighth, like, I don't care. Like, congrats.
Yeah, exactly.
Bro. Right. Like, it doesn't really matter because you're still not competitive with
you
can have our number in one game.
You need the trophies. Right. You need to start winning again. Level. Exactly. So once the two, like you said, once the two teams start competing together for the Prem, they're like, oh, we're going at it. Those derbies mean a thing. It's just like Liverpool City right now. It means something because they're competing at the highest level right now, and they're competing for the Prem. So yeah,
right. And that's the last one that I want to talk about is City Liverpool, because City Liverpool is the epitome of a modern rivalry. Yeah. Right. This is as the newest of any of the ones that we've seen. But if you look back, this has actually been quasi-competitive since, what, 2014? Right? Like
14, yeah,
maybe. 2015? Like, when did Liverpool, slip? When did Gerrard slip?
That was the year, 14, 15.
That was the start of this.
Yeah.
And then it changed, right? Like, then Liverpool, obviously, they came down a little bit, then they went up a little bit, and now this is literally the highest level that the best league in the world has ever seen.
Yeah,
but these two clubs are a modern rivalry. And I want to ask you this. Can this rivalry supersede going forward, right? In the future, because obviously historically it can't compete.
Correct, correct.
In the future, could this supersede the other rivalries we've talked about and be one that we remember as like, Le Classique, like the Classico, right? Can this be the new Classico? Because it's not a city dart. It's not like, and I see city, like not Man City, but city like within the same city type of derby. But where the two best of the best are playing each other, and we just call it like the English version, the classic, doesn't sound as cool, but just like the classic, the Premier League classic between the two best teams that the league has ever seen, which is 95 point plus perfection, Klopp's Liverpool versus Pep's Man City. Where will this go?
I mean, it depends. So if the managers aren't staying, then right. I think the rivalry like kind of dies. But if the two teams somehow still manage to compete at the same level for the next, I don't know, 5-6 years, then you got to say it's a rivalry, because six years is a long time, especially when consistently fighting for the Prem. That's crazy, you know, and that's where I think is going to be.
I couldn't even imagine that this being like, you know, 10 years of their, because I don't think and Klopp can do this forever.
No.
Genuinely, because I think that's what makes it special, is that it's not going to be forever.
Correct.
But however many seasons it lasts, the more times in, you know, a short window that two clubs can finish with more than 95 points in a season, because that's what it took to beat the other. Like, that's preposterous. Like, Leicester won the league with like 77 points.
I know.
Seems so far, so long ago. Because, and this is the thing, I consider the Leicester story the greatest story in professional sports ever. But that would never happen under like this current era, because it's just not even, not possible. If Fulham came up next year and then stayed in the Fulham, absolutely terrorizing the championship, and then beat Klopp's Liverpool and Pep's City. Okay, well now that makes Leicester look like just Wolves coming up and finishing in Europa League spot, right? That would be just the dumbest thing to ever happen. This is the highest level that the league has ever been, and these two are setting the standard. Like, I don't want, I do really admire that this is like, in terms of right now, was this the best rivalry you were talking about earlier? You said El Clasico was number two. This is the best one in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. You know, just to answer your question, basically, in essence, if it transcends Klopp and Pep, then yeah.
Right. I see what you mean. Right. If this becomes a club rivalry and not just a manager rivalry.
Manager rivalry? Yeah, it's different. It's different. That's when I know, like, this is a serious rivalry. If not, then
it's just something to look back on for the position.
Yeah. Because no matter where they are, Liverpool or United, that's still a rivalry. And Arsenal versus United, that's still a rivalry.
Yep.
You could say Chelsea United, but not anymore. I feel like the thing is with Chelsea, we just hate everyone in London.
Well, that's just it, right? I was going to say Chelsea, Arsenal, or even like North London. And then I'm like, I mean, we can talk about those, but anything in London is a rivalry. But there's how many London clubs could you name off the top of your head? Like 10?
10, yeah.
All of them hate each other. Everything's a rivalry. West London, North West London.
West Ham, like when we beat West Ham on the weekend, I was spitting, like, are you singing anymore? Because they were singing all day and they just shut up, didn't they? So that's it. I hate everyone. Like, bro, I hate Queen's Park Rangers. Like, who hates Queen's Park Rangers?
Do you hate Palace?
I hate Palace.
Do you hate Fulham?
Yeah, I hate Fulham.
You hate Tottenham
the most. I hate Tottenham.
We hate Tottenham.
What do you think of Tottenham? Shit.
Do you hate Millwall?
Millwall. I hate Millwall.
Do you hate? Yeah, that's true, bro. Yeah. I don't know, bro. There's a billion London clubs, bro.
Bro, Brentford's a London club.
That's great. How big is that city, bro?
Bro, it's not that big, but like Fulham though are like, I hate Fulham because like they're like next door neighbors.
But it's
funny how you have to hate your neighbors.
Literally. Because this is the thing. Like, nobody's cheering for Manchester. Like, if City reach a Champions League final, United fans aren't cheering for him.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, to be honest, I don't know what, I don't think United fans are going to be just, like, if at the champ, hypothetically here, I'm going to knock on wood. If the Champions League final is City versus Liverpool,
they're going
to have to imagine that's the United's worst possible dream, right?
Yeah.
Like, and they're just not tuning in. I mean, it's got to be like, this has to be the worst time to be a United fan because of how terrible they are and how their two, maybe not biggest rivals, you could make that argument, whatever, to who they have established notable, like historical, rivalries with are the best teams in the world.
I know.
Like,
that has to
be a terrible feeling.
I honestly don't feel bad. You guys deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't shut up for I don't know how many years. So here you are, Go get Maguire. You know, you made some, in the past couple of years, they made like amazing highlights with some terrible plays. But yeah, one more Champions League and we'll tie you guys. So I'm ready for that. That's it.
There you go.
European, of course, in the Prem, like they're the biggest club. Without a doubt. Like we're not even arguing that.
So. No. I mean, don't bring Mark in because Mark's going to come here and say,
Jose
Alex, Mourinho, not a top 10 manager all time. Oh, boy.
I do not condone. Yeah.
Are there any rivalries that I missed today that you want to give shout outs to?
Yeah, Spartak Moscow. No, I'm kidding.
There's tons, though. This is the thing, right? I could take you through a million rivalries. I could take you through Le Classique, right? Which is another classical, but again, not from the same city of PSG versus Marseille, right? We could talk about any of the derbies in London and what they mean and what they have meant and what they will mean in the future.
But these are the biggest ones.
These are some of the ones that I thought needed to be spoken about the most. What am I going to talk about? The Turin derby between Torino and Juve. Like, that's very one-sided. And a lot of these are very one-sided too. But Bayern won the league 10 years in a row. PSG won 8 for 10. Juve won 9 in a row before eventually losing. Like, ultimately what I wanted to look at with these ones specifically was, and this is probably a good place to end it, is maybe you and I can ask it on the note of City versus Liverpool.
Yeah.
What might the next great rivalries look like? Because we've spoken about a lot of classic ones and what they could look like going forward. But City-Liverpool is a good example of new rivalries, new things that could be that could be present in the future.
Yeah.
Do you see any other like derby/rivalries aside from City-Liverpool that you think could be meaningful, maybe not European, but domestic, whatever it is, rivalries in the future?
In the future, that's a very, very good question, to be honest. Well, honestly, as Newcastle gets better, they might get into a rivalry with whoever's competing at that point. If they do get
get the rivalry back with Sunderland, right?
There's impossible. That's not happening. Unless Sunderland gets bought by a Bahraini guy or some shit. There's no way because Sunderland are so down bad and you deserve it too. I hate you, Sunderland. They're so bad. They're like terrible. So that's not going to happen. But it's going to be similar to, you know, the City versus Liverpool-esque kind of thing. As Newcastle gets better, maybe, if they get better, you know, you can have all the money in the world, but if there's no structure, then there's
They are getting better, in fairness.
Yeah. So
they're like in top 10 right now.
And they were
fighting for relegation.
For relegation, in January. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They took Everton's spot, basically.
So, and I'm proud of them. That's good, bro.
Good for them.
Bruno Guimarães. I made the video. Number one signing in the January transfer window.
And you're right.
And look at him. Look at him. Tearing it up.
And that got a lot of views, bro, on YouTube.
I did. And those meant more to me than the ones on TikTok. That being said, I love the ones on TikTok. Keep them coming, guys. I will never get tired of people watching the content, sharing the content, listening to the content. Guys, thank you for tuning in to episode number 140 of the Jersey Wall Podcast. 140. We've been doing this for 6 years, and we're so excited because 5 years are in the books. This is our sixth year. Therefore, we've been doing it for 6 years.
Six.
Creating meaningful content for you guys to enjoy each and every week. The wall's only gotten better. The content's only gotten better. The broadcast voices have only gotten better. We hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. Joe, where can we find more from you?
At joeking.__ on all platforms.
Yeah. Boom. You can find me on Instagram at the Nathan Santos and everywhere else at MasterChef Nay, including on YouTube for special bonus clips and features of the Jersey Wall Podcast. Also on TikTok for the fastest growing hashtag in the history of the internet, TJW Bytes, shortened form of Jersey Wall content. Don't forget to go to ElmontYouthSoccer.com and enter the promo code TJW10 at checkout. And don't forget to follow the Jersey Wall Podcast on Instagram at TJW Podcast. Joe, that's it, dude. I think that's gotta wrap up this week's episode. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We love you. We appreciate you. And we'll see you next week right here on the Jersey Wall Podcast, baby. Woo!
Love you guys.